The purpose of Wealth Talk is to educate, inform, and hopefully entertain you on the subject of building your wealth. Wealth Builders recommends you should always take independent financial, tax, or legal advice before making any decisions around your finances.
Hello and welcome to episode 26 of Wealth Talk. My name is Christian Rodwell, the Membership Director for Wealth Builders, and I'm joined by Mr. Kevin Whelan, the founder. How are you today, Kevin?
I'm really, really great today. Thank you very much, Chris. Nice to have a chance to chat with you and obviously welcome all of our new members, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been great. So we dedicated last week's episode, Wealth Talk 25, to listen to some of the stories from our founder members who joined us back in May. And really, really pleased to say that we've had a few more people joining us over the last few days. And it's great to see those people sharing their signed declarations in our Facebook groups. So that always makes us very pleased to see, doesn't it, Kevin?
Well, it does, because, you know, it's not that everybody's a Facebook, friend, because not everybody wants to be there. We know that through Wealth Dynamics. But just those who do, and they're comfortable doing that, it's just a nice public declaration of their commitment, isn't it? And we all know that wealth is about action. And it's very, very easy to get overwhelmed and drift when you've got so many different actions to think about. And none more so, Chris, than the subject of today's podcast, which is one of the biggest subjects of all, which is property.
Indeed. So we're moving into pillar four of the seven pillars of wealth. And it's a big one, property, isn't it, Kevin? We know that the UK traditionally has had this love affair with property, and that's, you know, typically been buy to let. However, we know that property is multifaceted, and there's a number of different ways that this asset can be used to help build your wealth. And sometimes that can lead to it even becoming a bit overwhelming. There's so much choice.
Yeah, there is so much choice. And I think what's really interesting about the way that we might approach it is we're not coming at this from a point of view of we think, you know, one strategy is better than another strategy, in the same ways we don't think one wealth dynamic is better than another wealth dynamic. It's all about trying to wrestle with a whole combination of things in the leverage section, which you'll remember the podcast for that, Chris. Where was that one?
Leverage was FIRST first, and that was Wealth Talk 11.
Number 11, okay. So, and you know, we're always going to be, I suppose, reminding people of some of the things they've heard before for a number of reasons. You know, all of this does join up. And of course, it's nice to be reminded if some while ago, you know, you listened to something, you understood it, but you didn't necessarily put it into action. But you definitely need to think very carefully about property, you know, because if you're thinking about it, I mean, obviously property is such a fascinating asset, isn't it? It's tangible. You can feel it. You can experience it. You know, you can touch it in so many different ways that you can't do with the other big pillar, which is investments. And it's, you know, you, but of course there's so much more involved in that. And if you talk about, you know, we could reel strategies off our tongue, Chris, couldn't we? You know, we could go rent to rent, sourcing, buy to let, HMO with all the multitude of types of HMO, student service, special needs, LHA, service accommodation, lease options, options, commercial, commercial to residential, develop.
There's a number.
Keep going, right? I mean, I don't know how many that was, and that was just so just straight off. And you know, there's probably well over a dozen real property strategies. And what we don't want to do is, in this episode, Chris, is we're not going to dive deep into these. There's no point in doing that. We've got so many trusted partners who are experts in fields, but we know enough at Wealth Builders to know how each of the strategies work, which is critical, because the starting point for all forms of wealth, Chris, going back to the Wheel of Wealth, is
education.
Education. So there's so many different sources of education. So, you know, I don't want this episode to be just a repeat of other people's education, but it might be useful for new members just to almost be reminded of some of the principal ones, some of the pros, some of the cons, some of the things they should be thinking about in using their sources of leverage, some of the dangers that you always have to keep in mind when you're looking at property. But, you know, the big advantage a property when it comes to, which is why I think starting with leverage, Chris, is a good one, is, you know, is the fact that property uniquely has probably within all different economies, UK, US, and so on, you can just get leverage. You know, you can create, in other words, you can, let's give an example, Chris, just to bring it to life as we start here. If you've got £100,000 and you want to start building your wealth, the natural place people will go would be, say, to the stock market. So if they had £100,000 and we're using a very simplistic example, and they wanted to buy stocks and shares of or individual stocks or whatever they wanted to do, ETFs, whatever, then the amount of money they would be able to buy of that asset with £100,000, Chris, would be
£100,000.
Would not less charges, of course, and property too isn't without some charges, but less the buying cost. But if we take that to one side and say all assets have got some sort of buying costs, you've got £100,000. However, with property, and again being very simplistic, Chris, £100,000 worth of money when it comes to property, when you understand the financial leverage of mortgaging, for example, and again being simplistic, if you can get a mortgage of 75% of the value of a property, in other words, you know, for every £100,000 you can borrow another £300,000, then it means the same ownership of your capital of £100,000 can have you own and take control of £400,000 worth of property. And then if you understand that property has the capacity to generate an income, you're generating income from £400,000 worth of property asset instead of the income you could generate from £100,000 worth of stock assets. So the fundamentals completely change. So the speed at which you can build your wealth, potentially anyway, is massive. So it's just such a big accelerator, but we should always bear in mind the danger that leverage is a dangerous tool and it cuts both ways, doesn't it? So just as you can leverage up, you know, if you get something wrong, that leverage can hurt you as well. So there's always pros and cons with any form of strategy, but it's a strategy people have used successfully for many, many years and continues to be if you can get all the rest of the ingredients of the Wheel of Wealth in play. So once you've got your education, you know where you're getting your support from, and we've got many places of support, Chris, don't we? Whether it's trusted partners, whether it's you and me, whether it's the buddy system, you know, others that they would even choose to collaborate with. Then they take it from there into, you know, the connection. So who's the right place or who are the right people to share with you? And that's a really big one, the idea that whatever property strategy you're thinking about, we will know someone who is outstanding in that field. And from our perspective, you know, we've learned to trust them, and therefore they're a good source of connection. And just this week, Chris, I'll be connecting some of the foundation members with some people in a specific property strategy. One of our members asked me about HMOs, which we'll come on to, and wanted to meet some people who are specialists in that field, and with a few questions from me, and you know, about what type of HMOs and which geography they're looking at. We'll make those connections this week so that they can go and bring that education, not just from paper or from a course, and I guess we should talk about different ways people can get education, but also bring that education to life. Then once they've done that, it's then about the due diligence, and you know, it's a really big topic, and it's never lost on me that sometimes there's a temptation, once you understand what you think is enough, to bypass the due diligence stage. But we're going to suggest you don't do that. You do follow our due diligence pathway. And then from there, you go straight into, you know, getting the action taken and not worrying, actually, that the action that you take is always, because it will never be the best one, because whenever you do anything for the first time, it's never going to be your best job, is it?
So I think it's definitely worth maybe any of our new listeners who didn't hear episode 9, where we talks about the Wheel of Wealth, is to definitely check that out after finished listening to this episode. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes, along with the link to the episode on leverage, which was episode 11, and wealth dynamics, because we said that all of these fit together. And if someone is at a stage of overwhelm, or maybe at the beginning of the property journey and not quite sure which is the best fit, then understanding those three areas will help massively, won't it?
Yeah, it will. And, you know, I think sometimes, if we go back and just say, well, look, you know, the starting point for yourself in all wealth matters is to know yourself. And it's very obvious that when we see people with different strong dynamics, you know we measure the wealth dynamic in terms of the four frequencies. But, you know, and the reason I need to know the four, we need to know the four, is if somebody's particularly strong in one field, I'll give you a couple of examples. If someone is extraordinarily strong in dynamo energy, high level of creativity, and usually that's kind of reflected, and I was talking again to one of our hopefully coming members, Chris, because she was very kind of, she kind of brought to mind that she's very high dynamo energy and was getting herself stuck and probably actually choosing the wrong strategy in property, because, you know, I suppose what was happening is when somebody's very high in dynamo energy, one of the weaknesses they will often display, which just needs to be acknowledged, it's not a bad thing, is that the attention to detail on the due diligence wasn't that strong. So there can be a temptation to do things just a bit too quickly or without really thinking them through and then make a mistake. You know, and I think the mistake that this particular person made was buddying up with someone before doing due diligence on them, and then finding they, you know, got a partner in a project where there wasn't a good a match as they thought there was going to be. So, you know, that's one. The other, so the there's obviously often a connection, Chris, between high levels of dynamo and low levels of steel, which is the due diligence piece, really. And the other thing which we often see is those people who are high in steel will often want to know everything before they start anything. You know what I mean by that? So they'll get stuck in wanting to know every strategy before they choose one strategy. And the whole thing is about stepping stones, you know? So you don't have to know every strategy to know which one is best suited to you with the various sources of leverage that you have at your disposal, particularly levels of funding and levels of time. Because the big challenge for everybody, if they're building any new asset, is, you know, one of the challenges with property is it takes more time. So you could choose a set of stocks, couldn't you, Chris, in an afternoon? But it's difficult to find a property in an afternoon. And some people get tempted to do that, which is why they often will look for the lowest and easiest access point, which, let's say, typically has been in the past, Chris, buy to let, hasn't it?
It has, yes. And we know there's obviously been changes in the property market. There always has been, there always will be. What about the people that are out there saying, well, is property still a good asset class? You know, it's changed so much. It's got so much harder now over the last few years. What are your comments on this, Kevin?
Well, that's a great question, Chris. And the point is, you know, wealth is built on understanding all seven assets, so probably just one of those. If you choose to use it because you feel that the value that you can bring, because let's remember that one of the big differences in property and a big plus point of property. Let's give a few plus points of property, shall we? So one of those I mentioned already is you can get leverage. You can't get that traditionally if you put the money in the stock market. The second thing is, you know, you can really bring added value yourself. So let's take a difference here. So if traditionally, and there is a market and still a demand for buy to let, why not? Because it still provides a yield. So let's give an example. If someone, you know, spends time, does some online research in terms of an area that they want to buy a property, they will, let's say, in simple terms, the easiest way to do it is you find a property online, you make an offer, you buy the property, you put a tenant in, and I'm being extraordinarily simplistic here, not recommending this at all, but let's say people do that, and it's not uncommon for that to happen, then, and they buy a property for, I don't know, let's say it's, I'm making up 400,000 just as we did before. And then they can work out that if they're getting a rental income, you know, of 20,000, then they're getting a 5% return on their money. Well, you know, for some people, 5% return, again, simplistically, might be a decent return on their money, and they'd be happy with that compared to either the uncertainty of the stock market or a diversifier to the stock market or an alternative to holding money in cash. And then in addition, you know, there could be some capital appreciation in the future. The other value there, Chris, is there's a disconnect between what I call a counter-correlation between the value of the asset and the value of the income. So if you are retired, let's say, and you are drawing income from your pension in the stock market, and the stock market goes down 10%, and you're drawing income from that, then it will necessarily impact on your income because essentially your value has gone down. And if you want to preserve it, there's every chance that if you keep spending what you were spending before, you're going to run out of money more quickly. Whereas if you've got a property and the property market goes down, but you're still getting your 20,000 in rent, has the rental income changed? So it hasn't, has it? So property value could fall by 10% and your 400,000 could go down, but it doesn't mean the rental income because there's no real urgency and speed of connection. And often the correlation doesn't work the way things work together is what correlation means. And so you get a disconnect there, so which is good because it protects you. The other thing which is really fascinating about property is, you know, there's a buyer and a seller that you can physically then make a connection and understand what's the motivation of the seller, what's the condition of the property, you know, and then use your own wealth dynamic to create value. So instead of buying the property online at, in this example, 400,000, you know, you could be in a position if you were looking for property or seeking out property in a way that allowed you to spot and learn how to see property where either the motivation of the vendor or the condition of the property will allow you to buy that at below, you know, a typical value. And that's very common to do that, often called BMV or below market value. Then you can create some appreciation immediately. In other words, you buy well. And then if you change and do something to the property, many strategies for changing and improving properties, then you're creating some forced appreciation. So then the skill that you build in your own network or in yourself, it allows you to create more value from that. So there's just multiple ways, Chris, of actually finding value. So you're not buying into just a market. You're creating a sort of a pocket of opportunity, an opportunity to create value for yourself by being involved in that market. So that's one of the big benefits of property as well. Your ability to do something to create more value. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does indeed.
So, I mean, that's why I think even all this talk of, you know, the bees, the Boris, the Brexit, you know, the banks, there's all sorts of things that can change and governments intervene as they have done with, you know, with the new rules on taxing landlords in a different way. So, all of these things, you know, are easy to find out the rules. I'm not going to go into those rules. But there's always some overlay to any asset. You know, what are the government doing? How do you fund it? What's the tax position? You know, if you're borrowing money, what are interest rates? And are you stress testing your returns against interest rates? You know, how are you planning to grow your education and turn the wheel again on another strategy? If, for example, you learn something about one strategy that moves you forward, and then you look at a higher level or a more complex strategy as you build your confidence. Because the whole thing about wealth is taking small steps, Chris. You remember, I keep saying this, is every month make a decision that moves your wealth forward. So I would say to anybody, you know, find a way to get started and then get started, because the very act of getting started, A, will create an asset for you, B, will create some cash flow or possibly capital. We'll talk about these in a minute. And then it will move you forward and build your confidence. It will make more connections for you. So the whole, you know, the whole dynamic of taking action will just move everything forward. And what we normally see is a sort of a hierarchy of this, from the simpler strategies and then getting increasingly more complex as you need more skill to create that forced value that I mentioned to you earlier on. And if I just, again, as an example, perhaps, Chris, before we dive in, last week we had a number of our investors, a number of our members who attended an event which was to go and visit a commercial to residential property. In other words, this is a client of ours who had bought an office block in near to Gatwick Airport in Crawley, in fact, and converted that to around 50 apartments. And while that's way, 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 way beyond the skill of somebody starting off for the first time, nonetheless, the value in seeing these things, going along, putting on the hard hat, wearing the high vis, you know, making sure you're all kitted out properly, but seeing something, it just brings education to life. It lets you see, well, this is what's possible in the future, whether I choose to be someone who does that or just someone who collaborates and participates with somebody who is doing that. In other words, you can become a finder of property, you can be a funder of property, you know, you could be somebody who owns the property and you want to, you know, fill it up and generate the rental income. So there's just multiple ways where you can use property and your particular dynamic and your particular time to be able to do the right thing. So hopefully that sets the scene. I guess a bit of a ramble, but I think it was all about saying it all boils down to almost trying to put on a spreadsheet, a little kind of mini matrix of who you are, how much time do you have, how much funding do you have, you know, what's your particular feeling about where you might want to start, and then get a bit of education in one or two strategies so that you get a point of contrast at the beginning. So, you know, I'd always suggest comparing two and just choose a couple. And if you're not certain, then connect with us and we'll help you distill your own leverage down to one or two. But there's some really, really good books, Chris, out there that will give a much deeper view. There's some very established trainers out there who've written some things, and like anything, you know, there's different ways of getting training, and we can also talk about that. But certainly, you know, Property Magic, Simon Zucci, there's books by Rob Moore and Mark Homer. There are many others as well that, you know, we can build a library of to give people access to those books. And we have, Chris, relationships with all of these people to provide both, you know, written education, classroom education. Again, back to your wealth dynamic, what suits you best? Do you want to work in groups? Do you want to work on your own? You know, so all of these things will come into play. And that's why it's really, really important to have the support of a coach or somebody who can help you, you know, overcome that inertia to get your property journey on track instead of drifting, thinking about, well, which one should I look at and which one should I start with, and so on. So where can we start, Chris? What should we dive into just a little bit, just to give people a feeling?
Well, we mentioned you reeled off a good number of strategies there, didn't you? And it's worth saying that, as we have done with previous pillars over the last few episodes, we will be asking and inviting some of our members of the Wealth Builders community to come and share on forthcoming episodes how they have approached these strategies. So we will be doing that over the coming weeks and deep diving into some specifics. I know certainly HMOs we want to cover in a bit more detail, don't we, Kevin?
Yeah, HMOs. So, and we've got trusted partners, you know, who, look, I probably, Chris, just touching on HMOs, you mentioned it, probably got something like 150 something like that, I guess, clients who built their entire wealth pretty much around the HMO concept. Now, I'm not saying that's right, but it was right for them. And, you know, they managed, because of the huge potential value, to create, you know, their target income, whatever that level would be, 5,000 a month, 10,000 a month, whatever. Usually it's about 10,000 a month. And they're getting that entirely from, you know, HMOs. And that doesn't mean entirely, but, you know, they'll have a stock market portfolio. They'll have assets in their pension. They'll have assets in their home and so on. But primarily, there's a driving force behind anybody's wealth. And HMO being a very common one. Why don't we start with, there'll be some of our members, Chris, who might be saying, well, HMO, you know, home and multiple occupancy is a interesting strategy, but isn't it expensive? Why don't we start with saying, well, look, you know, you've got to look at the first balance, once you understand your own self and your wealth dynamic, is this balance of time and money. And they're the critical things. So if you don't have, if you have time, but you don't have money, why don't we talk about what you could do there?
Mm. There's certainly at least a couple of strategies that spring to mind for someone in that position.
Yeah. So, you know, and again, I'm not recommending any strategy. I'm just saying this, why they're there is because you can have a look at them and choose them or not choose them. So, you know, one strategy is something known as rent-to-rent. And the essential ingredient of a rent-to-rent strategy is the fact that your time there, you have to be time engaged, and you're looking to find landlords who have property, but maybe, you know, they become tired, disinterested, you know, maybe they made mistakes, they thought they'd like to be the manager of the property, but in the end, they hate it. And there is no shortage of landlords who are like that, maybe fed up with the government intervention, maybe just getting old, all of these things. And, you know, typically, a landlord, let's use our £400,000 property again, Chris, and say they're renting a property, and the typical way to rent a property is to a single family. So let's say they're renting the property to a single family and they're getting, what would they be getting on that? So, say they were getting 20,000, yeah? So getting 20,000 a year. And so if they're getting that kind of level of income from one property, then, you know, they may be happy with that. So the principle of rent to rent is to say, well, okay, what if I was able to secure a contract, say for 3 to 5 years with the landlord, and then instead of renting the property in a way that they were doing for, you know, for a whole house, what if I was able to turn that property into several rooms and let by the room instead of letting the whole property? And this is the rent-to-rent essence here. So you're creating more value by you have to spend some money, Chris, because you've got to get a legal agreement between you and the owner. But B, you know, spend some money on making some changes so that you can effectively let the property in multi rooms. And let's say if you rented the rooms and including conversions of things like big lounges into bedrooms and so forth, you can often, you know, turn a property from one level of rent to double that rent. It's not uncommon for the rent to be double. And then if you can create that extra value, you're paying the current landlord either the same rent or some negotiated rent, but then you're able through your own skill to market. And there are at least a couple of places where you can test this out, and I'll come on to that in a second. You can turn this into a multi-let, then you're in a position to generate some income from an asset somebody else owns, but you've had the tenacity and the creativity to bring that asset more to life for you. So that generates a rental income for you, but of course you've had to involve yourself in the time of finding the property and negotiating with the landlord and then finding the tenant. So that's why you need time to do that strategy. And it's an interesting strategy. I've got one person I know, Chris. This is a shocker. She doesn't own a single property, but she's generating £1 million a year in income from rent to rent. So it's doable. And yeah, and that's all through local authority. So finding properties, you know, usually in blocks, and then rents them back to a local authority. Now, obviously, there's a skill there. You would argue there's a relationship bit of leverage there that she's managed to develop with her local authorities, build that reputation, and then little by little, you know, £1 million a year in rent to rent without owning property. Now, there's dangers there because you don't own the property. So if you don't own the property, of course, you know, at some point, you've got an income, but the whole point is if you're generating income, then you're building up capital that you can either reinvest or use that for future deposits, if you get the point.
That's very good. Sure. And I guess similar to that would be sourcing properties, because they kind of both go a little bit hand in hand, don't they? You need to source those rent-to-rent properties, but instead of then taking it on yourself, you may wish to build a relationship with an investor and source a property deal and negotiate with the seller and then be able to pass that on to an investor.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I suppose with this one, you're then having to find an additional skill, haven't you? So you'll need to have the right wealth dynamic to be able to find and negotiate, not just with the vendor, but if you're sourcing property to sell to somebody else, then you've got to negotiate the you know, deal with them and find them, you know, find a supply of people who are looking. And again, there's usually this balance, isn't there? So somebody who's sourcing property is often sourcing property for somebody else who has less time. So balance of understanding, you know, who the other person is. I mentioned there were a couple of sites, Chris, that you can test this out really quite cheaply, in fact, and possibly even for free. So if you're looking at rent-to-rent as an example, if you want to check whether there's a demand and what kind of average prices there are per room just by way of research, in the same way as you can run if we're teaching people how to do options, let's say in property or stop losses, you can teach them in a facsimile, you can teach them in an account which isn't live, a paper account really. You could do the same here. You know, you can have a look at spareroom.com or the other one, which is, remind me, Chris, of the...
Gumtree is a good one for property as well.
Yeah, and also Airbnb, of course. And by looking at those, you can see, you know, you can almost build yourself a matrix of, in the geography you're looking at, is what's the average rent. You can click to find out what's the demand for people who want to buy rent property in that area and what the average rental income is, you know, per room. You've got a whole kind of inbuilt research. And if you wanted to test the market, you could even create a dummy advert to be able to see if people were responding, you know, just to get a feeling if you're serious about doing that, so that you can test the market before you actually deliver to the market. So some very interesting things you can do if you've got the time and your challenge is you're lacking in funds. And those people who've got time and funds, then they've got the whole sort of gamut of different types of property at their disposal beyond that. So should we get into a bit more of, say, maybe HMO?
We could touch on that, absolutely. And then that kind of intros us into our guests in the following week, yeah.
So, you know, the multi-let property, there's a difference. Oh, by the way, you know, I don't want to get too cautionary right now, just before I leave rent-to-rent, by the way, but whatever you're doing when you're dealing with landlords, you've got to make sure in the due diligence stage that you've made sure that you're not crossing into, on the rent-to-rent as you take control of that, into needing an HMO license. And that's not for me to cover here, but you could Google HMO licensing. And the other thing is to make sure that your landlord, if they're subletting, aren't breaking any terms and conditions if they have a mortgage. So there's, you know, there's some due diligence, as there always is, around these things. But turning into HMOs, you know, you've got different ways to look at the multi-let strategy. So, you know, I'd say there's probably, I guess, three main types probably that we could talk about now just briefly, as it gives our members a chance to think about this before they start on their reading. The simple one is, it's not dissimilar to rent to rent, actually, but because it's just that now you own the property as opposed to you've got a contract to manage the property. So with an HMO, you're buying a property. The principle of the buying then is the conversion of the property, the right standards to generate a room by room letting. And I'd say there were three sort of types of tenant, really. One would be the young professional market. And you know, most HMO landlords that I know are kind of focused on that, where they're looking for properties where there's a high demand for, you know, professional workers, so that they almost they're bringing an experience of higher quality than, let's say, you or I did when we left university, you know, where the very first properties we move into weren't always of the best quality, certainly not when I was at university anyway. So this is kind of a step up, really. And there's some outstanding examples of that, and we'll bring to the to a podcast or a webinar people who've done an outstanding job in that. And it's been a great solution for people over recent years. And so young professionals, that's a good market to look at. The second market, again, very popular, different dynamic in terms of timing, is the student market. And I know because, you know, my kids have been in there in different times over their lifetime when they were at university. And the issue there, of course, is you're renting property to the student market, which means you've got to get the property right and the timing right and the marketing right in order to make that work. But of course, you've got the pros and cons of, on the one hand, there's a big pros, often mums and dads are the guarantors, so that you know your property, even though it might well suffer a few, you know, challenges there, some scrapes and scratches and all sorts of different things, you know what I mean there. But of course, mums and dads often sign as a guarantor to make all that right. So that's a good thing. But if you get the timing wrong, you could have an empty property, you know. So that's really an interesting strategy for some. And the third one is what I would often call special needs. And what I mean by that is where the tenant of the property is specifically chosen because they need some form of special protection they're afforded some special protection in law. And often that's in association with local authorities. So we've got clients who have done that with providing homes for protected children who need protection, asylum seekers, those rehabilitating from, you know, challenges with violence or drugs or whatever it would be. So again, you've got to choose and understand that there are just different markets for different things, and it's about just trying to work out which is likely to be best for you. And everybody's different, and you can almost hear that there's just different reactions to people when you talk about the different ways that you're seeking a tenant in a multi-let environment. So it also depends on, you know, yourself and how you feel about that. So that's the big market, that one, HMOs. And some people would argue that, you know, with the changes the government have made, it's made it tougher. And certainly there are rules where different councils put restrictions on it called Article 4, you know, where they want to limit the number of HMOs in an area. But this is all part of the education, Chris. Once you get into it, you know, this is why we'll have, you know, people who've been doing HMOs for years who can bring all these lessons, because, you know, it's easy to make a mistake. I've definitely seen somebody who came to us looking for help, Chris, where they bought a property. They thought they were going to turn it into an HMO. They'd done all the maths. It all looked right. This was before they were engaged with us. And lo and behold, when the due diligence piece would have been done, what it turned out to be, there was a specific condition in the clause of the estate where they bought the property, that it was not possible to run a sublet. And they fought this and they lost, and they had to turn the property into an assured short-haul tenancy property, an AST property, a single-family property. And all the hard work and effort they put into it was to no avail. And in the end, they sold the property. But the whole point about this is you have to know what you're doing and have to think and prepare and turn the wheel full circle before you make your decision. And that's the danger with property. Get it right, and it's an acceleration of your journey. Get it wrong, and it will slow you down forever because you'll keep being fearful of making mistakes, if you see what I mean.
Well, that's been a good overview, I think, Kevin, for today's episode. And there's a lot to look forward to over the coming weeks, for sure. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you feel is important when we're talking about an overview to the property pillar, Kevin?
Well, I think there's been a massive growth, hasn't there, in what's called service accommodation as well. So instead of letting the property by the family or by the building or by the room for a long-term let, the service accommodation model, or really there's a whole kind of section in property which deals with properties led by the evening, you know, led by the night or the day. And this is where the service accommodation comes in. And again, I think we're seeing increasingly very specialist, very clever people who are choosing to find properties in an area where there's a demand, a very specific demand, for people who want to be renting property as an alternative to a hotel.
Such as the Airbnb model.
Yeah, exactly. And, a few come to mind with clients that we have. One, he's got a real penchant, Chris, for music, you know, music concerts. And so his strategy is to buy properties as close as possible to major places where concerts are played. And then he'll find his tenants from the people who attend the concerts. So if you really love, you know, whoever you love and you want to go see him, then why not advertise in the places where those people are, you know, showing themselves to be interested in that. And in all sorts of great places in all the big cities. So not concentrating in one city, but the big cities next to concert halls. You know, so that's a strategy. Another one is a client that we have. His properties are all focused around, let's say, you know, what we would say would be classic heritage type properties. You know, the sort of properties that would really be appealing on the eye. They'd look like there'd be a blue plaque outside. You know, they're just fantastic looking properties, and generating very high levels of rental, much, much more so in the same way as you can get double the rent from a single family let into multi-let. Often you can get a multiple of that, you know, 2, 3, 4 times the rental income by doing it, treating it like a business, really. It's almost like an apart hotel or a hotel in your mind. You've got to have all of the necessary facilities to be able to change, you know, the bedding and do all the things and having your booking systems sorted, all of these things in play. And there's just a couple of examples, but another one in the Lake District, you know, where specifically looking for people who love walking in the lakes. So you just have to find your niche. And so service accommodation, and you know, an extension of that would be, you know, small hotels and holiday lets and all sorts of different things, which are much more focused around very shorter term lets than the longer term lets. So, you know, and then you're moving from dealing with retail customers in the main to, you know, moving into the area of commercial. And in the same way with commercial, Chris, you've got commercial property, very simple. A lot of our clients have got the SAS pension that you can often hear our members talking about. And then they use the SAS pension to buy the building that they want to operate their business from. And therefore, they become a landlord to themselves, which is great. Or if they wanted to, they could buy a building and rent it to somebody else. In the same way as a buy-to-let would be a single-family let, commercial property can be a single corporate let. But increasingly we're seeing, you know, in the same way as HMO has changed the way that properties are let, then there's commercial HMO. You know, we're just starting to work with one client who's specialist, who learned HMOs in the residential side and is now buying commercial properties that are tied and maybe distressed in some way, and then rents them out to smaller businesses. This has been a burgeoning of smaller businesses, Chris, then they need somewhere to operate from. So he provides that accommodation. So instead of having a single company renting the property for us, say a typical yield there would be, say, 6 to 8%, you know, could be getting 12 to 15% or more by letting the property to multiple tenants.
Co-working's popping up all over the place now.
Right. So you can see there's you know, the market changes and intelligent people will respond to that market in a certain way. And just as there's never been, and if you full circle that one and say, well, okay, you know, we talked about residential and we know that the government's demand or their intention to create residential units, houses for people is never really going to be reached and it's still not reached. One of the ways increasingly that that's being done is through commercial to residential, as I mentioned earlier on with one of our clients who's turning an old office block into 50 apartments. Well, that's a huge potential influx if you know, people can find a skill to do that. And the government have made incentives to help that through something known as permitted development, essentially meaning it kind of obviates the need to do as much of the planning. It's more complicated than that, but let's say for simplistic terms. So, you know, you're able to, if you're the developer, to spend less money and less time to be able to convert that property under permitted development rules to be able to get the property and have more units. And if they're built specifically, as they often are, for first-time buyers with help to buy, which makes them more attractive and so on, then, you know, that demand for those properties can be easily met. However, there's a risk, isn't there, that, you know, you choose the wrong area or you spend a lot of money or something goes wrong or, you know, you need planning. So you need the specialist education and knowledge. And we've got many clients in our community who are our trusted partners who will bring that knowledge and skill to share with those people who feel that that would be something that they're interested in exploring and just seeing and experiencing, or is it something they may learn to want to do in the future? So just as possible, Chris, in the world of property, to be, you know, the finder of property and the owner of property, it's also possible to simply be a funder of property. You know, we know that many of our clients with their SASs have got lots of money and often don't have the skill just yet. So part of their method by which they would put that money to work is often to be a funder of other people's projects, which serves two purposes. One, it gives them that return on investment, subject to whatever due diligence they do or we help them do, gives them a good return on their money, typically, you know, 8 to 12%. But then in addition are getting that access to people with the skill, the knowledge, the experience that they can see and, if necessary, learn how to absorb that knowledge in the future as either as a supplement to their training that they might get from training professionals or as a replacement for that, if they think they can get all the knowledge directly from that trusted source. So it's just an incredible place of collaboration, of learning, of getting an experience. And I think what I found more than anything else, Chris, and our clients will testify to this, is how much free and shared knowledge there is in the community. Whereas if you're paying for training, you know, it's a transactional thing, isn't it, really? And nothing wrong with paying for training, by the way. But if you can get that training together with the combination of a great relationship and a real experience, then why not think about that as an alternative or as a supplement to any training you've either got or you're thinking about getting?
And again, there's always that risk of overwhelm because there are so many podcasts, there are so many property networking events, there are so many Facebook groups and meetups online. But as you say, there's a great, great amount of resources out there for people to start just learning a little bit about some of these different areas and then using that knowledge of themselves, the wealth dynamics, the leverage, then hopefully start to focus in on the ones that make the most sense for them.
Well, you know, the members, of course, who join forces with us, Chris, get that opportunity to have a coaching call every so often, don't they? Every couple of months, I think. So if they're having that call, then they're in a place where all of these resources and all of these thoughts are kind of constructed to help them plot their way through it, so they don't get overwhelmed, because we see and give them clarity, as opposed to themselves sometimes getting into a place of just getting a bit of confusion. And as soon as confusion sets in, your brain shuts down and no action takes place. And as wealth only flows from action, then, you know, that's going to be, it's going to slow it down and sometimes even bring it to a stop. I've seen people, you know, who've been thinking about property for years, and somebody has to be a catalyst for them to overcome the inertia, and the inertia often can only be overcome by somebody actually they trust helping them. But how do you find people you trust? Well, we would certainly argue Wealth Builders is a trusted community, a safe harbor. So far, for the length of time we've been doing it, and I've been looking at this and working and collaborating with people now since 2008, Chris, in the way I'm doing it. And so far, we haven't had any disasters or tragic stories that have gone wrong. Obviously, sometime soon, I guess, you know, something will go wrong, but thousands and thousands of connections have taken place without anything, you know, that would cause anybody any stress financially, intellectually, or from a relationship point of view. So I'm really pleased with how we've done. But of course, the podcast isn't about, you know, just talking about Wealth Builders community, but anybody can tap in and just see some of our members and what they're doing and who they're connecting with.
Yeah. And there may well be questions that people listening right now have around property. And as always, we would say, please do ask us any questions, anything that you'd like us to discuss or talk about on a future episode. And you can do that by heading over to wealthbuilders.co.uk/wealthtalk. There's a big orange button on top of that page. You can just hit record and send us a voice message. Ask us any questions that you might have, or post them in the Facebook group if you're in the Wealth Builders Facebook group. And thanks to everyone who's been leaving reviews. We sometimes forget to acknowledge these, don't we, Kevin? But we've had a number of reviews left on that very same page, wealthbuilders.co.uk/wealthtalk. And thanks to everyone for your kind comments so far. It really, really does mean a lot to us. And we surpassed 10,000 downloads, didn't we, recently, Kevin, as well? And, downloads increasing every week. So we're very, very happy that people are sharing this and enjoying this and hopefully getting lots of value.
Yeah, and it's going to get tougher from now on because, you know, everything else up until now, Chris, has really been the foundational element. It's really been getting ready to take action. And we're already seeing some, you know, definitely you can see the confusion, you can see the questions pick up from the investment side last time. You know, how do we, you know, the big question is how? How do we do this? How do we do that? And the same thing is going to apply here. You know, how do we do this? And part of the challenge at the beginning when you've got so many options is what to do. So go back, do a little stock take, make sure you've done your wealth dynamic, work out, you know, what funding you do have, work out what time you do have, what's your preferred learning style. You know, for example, you know, some people will not want to go to networking meetings and stuff like that, and others will love to do that. So what's your natural style of connecting? And then let us know, and we'll help you build your own matrix, whether we connect with you or not, to help you, you know, start to look at each different strategy. And maybe even try and think about matrixing, it's hard to word say that, putting together a matrix to help people at least see the pros and cons within their wealth dynamics, Chris.
Yeah, I think that'd be very useful. Great. Well, that's been a great start, I think, on Pillar 4 today, and lots of good stuff to come over the coming episodes.
Well, looking forward to diving in and looking forward to giving a platform to some of our trusted partners and some of our Wealth Builder clients who've demonstrated their own strength in taking actions in each of the different property strategies that we uncover in the coming weeks and months.
Great. Looking forward to that. Thanks for your time today, Kevin. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. And we'll catch up on the next episode of Wealth Talk.
Okay, see ya.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget that we are constantly updating our resources inside the Wealth Builders membership site to help you create, build, and protect your wealth. Head over to wealthbuilders.co.uk/membership right now for free access. That's wealthbuilders.co.uk/membership.